Well, but Bruce said that he's going to make a meeting.
Okay.
Anybody call in?
Yeah.
No.
Aside from agency and.
No, AC numbers are aside.
Incident. And. The art's already enough, I think.
Yeah, I'm here. We're just, I think Kyle must have started as the host, huh?
Yes.
Okay. Does he have someone to hand the host off to, or is he just going to let it run in the background?
He's going to let it run in the background, and then I'm co-hosting with him, and if anything goes awry, then he's there.
Oh, okay. Awesome. I just wanted to, I was just jumping on to make sure everything got fired up and just taken care of, so.
We love our internet, don't we, Art?
Yeah. It's working better here in Anchorage today as well, so.
Yep. Okay. And this is joining us board support is Christy.
Hi, Georgie.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing well. I'm just doing a bit of roll call here. There's a call in user one. Justin Horton. Can I get the name of the caller in with the last three digits on their phone, 054?
Hi, my name is Nisa Pilcher.
Hello, Nisa.
Hello. Do you need my affiliation?
No, I'm just going to rename you here.
Gotcha. Thanks.
Thank you.
Well, we're frequently running late. I wanted to wait another 5 minutes or so before I just call this a work session. But I think it doesn't look good right now. I haven't seen some of the people I expected.
In the last meeting, did I talk about the working group?
Yes. Maybe not. Thanks. Let me check.
That was like maybe the very end of the meeting that just touched on it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you've gone to that meeting.
No.
I think that was after our last.
person online at last four digits 499 can give your name to us.
Maybe from Sean today.
Living up with our own money, and I'm just gonna use some last minute stuff. Just gonna get home and rip off my Wi-Fi at the shade.
Like,
I guess I'm not doing anything.
I felt like that Alaska, and I thought, yeah, I should have brought my Starling back from Canada. Everything went out, the Starling would work.
Well, it kind of does. This morning I got up and the mind was out and then it logged on for a while. It is what it is, I guess.
We've got several people on the line, but no members.
No members yet, no. The one that joined us online with last three digits, 499, could you say your name, please? I'm sorry, we didn't hear you. You were breaking up.
Ken Adkison.
Thank you.
I was chasing of the DD-685 Pumas, non-residents, how many of them were hyper guys?
Yeah, I got what you can see, I mean, like, just kind of brown bears started on the internet, whatever. Let's check. Yeah, James Smith was asking me about that, too.
Yeah, but he wants to make some big payments. Yeah, you know, I'm not going to host them, but I don't, for the industry,
yeah,
that's, might be a bad deal. Yeah, but all you guys are going to support it, so it's like fighting City Hall. It's like me and my $25, please. Come on. I've been saying that forever.
Well, now we're not looking good.
Yeah.
It doesn't look like we're going to have a quorum, so I think we're going to have a work session. We'll still kind of stick to our agenda, but with only four members here and a requirement of eight for a quorum, it's not looking good.
Is that based on the number of seats, or is that a set number? Because we have several vacant seats, right?
And we only actually have one.
Oh, thank you.
But yeah, we have several people that probably are, have left us, but it's unofficial. So, it's a frustration. So until the villages replace the members that aren't active, they're technically just four members and part of the quorum's determination. Oh.
And then there's terms that expire. And
but regardless, so here's, we have X amount of seats, and whether they're filled or not, we still need
a percentage of the total.
Total seats.
What are the
questions? Majority plus one. So, anyway. So, Georgie, I guess I'll just declare a work session until we have a quorum. If that sounds
all right. Do you want to do a roll call to make it official?
Yeah, I guess we should do that for the official. So.
Okay, Charlie.
I'm here.
Brandon. Musak.
Absent.
Kevin Nolton.
Absent.
Jacob Mannix.
Present.
Floyd Kaitsuluk.
Absent.
Andrew McCain.
Here.
Clifford Seatook. Absent. Jack Fagerstrom.
Absent.
Davis Lincoln. Is absent. Henry Olano Jr. Absent. Tom Gray.
Yes, ma'am.
Patrick Noodle.
Absent.
And Charles Acutis. Absent.
Absent.
Yeah, four present. Needing eight for a quorum.
Yes. Okay, well, with that, we'll start a work session, and first we'll could you introduce yourself?
Yeah, this is Sarah Germain, the known area wildlife biologist.
Okay, and then guest in the room, could you introduce yourself, please?
Hi, this is Megan Gannon from the Known Nugget.
Okay. And online, I see
James Smith.
Oh. Hi, James.
And I, is this the time to introduce myself, or do you guys want to wait till later, or where, yeah?
I was going to ask you to follow the, yeah, go ahead, just really briefly, we're going to give you a chance to speak a little bit later, though.
Okay, well then I'll just wait till later, that's fine. James Smith here.
Okay. And I see the Park Service, represented twice. Jeanette, are you there?
This is Ken Atkinson. No, I don't think anybody else from the Park Service. I didn't hear anybody.
Oh, okay. Okay, Ken. Okay. Are any of the other call-in guests still present? Lisa.
Lisa Pilcher.
Hey, I am still here. This is Nisa Pilcher with OSM, just calling in to see what was going on.
Okay. We're going to say horrible things about the rat. Okay. No.
If you need me to, I can get off, too.
And from board support, we have our director, Christy Tibbles, online.
Hi,
and
okay.
Also Art Nelson,
yep.
From board support for the fisheries.
Okay, it looks like everybody here. So we have a lot more support people than we have members almost. Okay. Well, then, as I said earlier, I intend to follow our agenda roughly, and with the addition that I'm going to ask Mr. Smith to talk to his issues following the fishing game update. So, and so I guess that next report would be mine, so I'll be as brief as I know how. I did attend the Caribou Working Group meeting in December. Caribou Working Group. It was passed a proposal, I've forgotten the numbers now, but with one dissent that they wanted to forward a proposal to both the federal board and the Board of Game to limit individual hunters of the Western Arctic caribou herd to four caribou per year, only one of which
ID female. This proposal was brought forward by the Coxsackie AC and RAC. It was interesting because the year before we had quite a discussion on the same topic, the decline of the caribou and how they were so going in a bad way, and here we are approaching the 50-year low in this 50-year cycle with a low that that's resembling the one 50 years before. So we're at that time, I think 160,000 animals estimated, and now it's 100 and much fewer. That'd be good. But it's 130,000 is kind of the threshold where preservative management kicks in, and basically we really come up hard against the amount necessary for subsistence ANS, and most, to my way of thinking, the trajectory is that about 2 years we'll be in that lowest category on the scale, and that's very very concerning. So the Kotzebue area was very concerned about the lack of animals this year, and they came in with this proposal, which is really a radical proposal compared to what we talked about the year before. A year ago, the animals wintered in the vicinity of Upper Kobuk. So those, one of the descending bulls came from that area because they're, you know, in their mind, it seemed like there were more caribou than was felt elsewhere. So anyway, it was, I was very surprised at the unanimous or near unanimous vote. And there was discussion about when this should take effect, and at that meeting, the majority felt that we should let the normal time schedule run, which would have been a year and a half or so before the regulation would go into place, assuming it was passed by the two boards. However, in the meantime, after the meeting, it appears that the Kotzebue guys have asked for an accelerated timetable, so not sure how that's going to be received at either board, but they're trying to bring it up on an accelerated phase. So I don't know if that were to happen, I guess it would come into effect next July 1st, but if it goes on the original schedule, it'll be another year. So that's that. Also attended at the AC's request the AYK finfish meeting at the Board of Fish. Things went much as anticipated. We lost by one vote on the Salmon Lake escapement goal issue. We had asked for a BEG, a biological escapement goal, to be resemble the numbers produced by the Limnology Lab in Kodiak for the fertilizer. So that's to say that the midpoint of the fishing range would be 10,000 salmon in the lake, and at the range of 7,000 to 15,000, I believe. And but our current goal is 6.5 to somewhere close to 30,000. So the department staff was unable to reach consensus on which goal they liked. So they took no opinion. Usually they say it's allocated and we can't comment. This time they said, we have no opinion. We don't know what the goal should be. And
delay a strict reading of the regulation is that the DEG has to be set with the consensus of the Board of Fish and the department. Since the department had no opinion, there couldn't be a consensus. So the board members, three of them voted for it anyway, and at least two of them expressed frustration that one guy said, that's an elegant solution, but I can't vote for it legally. I was frustrated. After that consideration, both the management coordinator and the research coordinator very likely both approached me and said, you know, we need to talk about this, and yeah, we could come to an escapement goal and management scenario that would be much closer to what you suggest. So, I haven't followed up on that, but at least at the time they were willing to give ideas. But unfortunately, I don't think the run is going to be that strong this year. So at least for the coming summer, I kind of suspect this is going to be an academic discussion and not going to change the facts. I don't believe we'll have very many kids. Anyway, so that's seems like something we might want to try to get the department to set an SEG on their own in that range, because it seems like there's support for that. So that's not a Board of Fish action, that's a administrative action. Anyway, so those are the, then I attended the Area on Alaska Peninsula Fisheries meeting, and that's making the news. Again, we lost 3 to 4. The idea was to severely restrict the commercial fishery during June at Area M and basically reduce fishing time to about half of what it is, what it was. And what occurred instead was a slight reduction in time. So we AYK, Crystal Bay, and Chignik, and Nelson Lagoon all supported proposal 140, which put two big windows of time in a week for fish to pass through that fishery so that they could make their way to the Western Alaska salmon stream. It was primarily focused on some salmon, but we thought it would benefit Chinook and Coho as well. What the board did was they asked the same fleet to reduce time so that they could catch fewer chum in order to do some conservation. So I have a number of articles and things that I've been collecting. What happened was there were lawsuits threatened immediately during the testimony. The Commissioner of Fishing Game changed his testimony to say that he wasn't allocating between subsistence and commercial fishing. Really, it was a conservation thing. He didn't change the thing. We got 1/6 of what we asked for. In other words, the same fleet lost a few hours fishing time. We had testimony from the lead professor at University of Washington that told us that 72-hour windows were required to allow a salmon to pass entirely through the June Area M fishery,
And we got one 60-hour window. And we got a couple 24. So it was, so currently there's a lawsuit generated from the custody firm, I think from Calista Corporation, to sue the state for poor management. What was unique was that the Alaska Outdoors Council threatened lawsuits, and I haven't heard of that one hitting the street yet, but they're based in Fairbanks. They're a sportsman's group, and that was surprising to see Kananaw Chiefs, Alaska Outdoors Council, and Calista all on the same page. That's highly unusual. So anyway, I don't think this issue is done. The Area M consideration is done. Next week is the North Pacific Fisheries Council talking about pollock and salmon interception in the pollock fishery. That is sure to be a contentious issue as well. The governor took nominations for people to be on the council to replace outgoing members, but he went with he didn't go with a native organization like many people were suggesting. He went with the most aggressive of the CDQ groups candidate, and so I don't. He also nominated two fishing game officials, one the director of commercial fisheries, and so that's, I don't think that's legal. I don't think there's a petition in right now to, ask the council staff if a commissioner can suspect multiple fishing game employees on that comes. So I haven't heard the answer to that. And then finally on that topic, there's a bunch of stuff in the press regarding hatchery impacts to wild stocks. And so there's a fair amount of research that's been done on that. Mostly on Chinook bound for the Columbia River, but to some extent in Alaska as well. And to be really brief, the lead on those articles is the University of Washington, one of the best fishery schools in the U.S., and the Dr. Schindler is one of their head professors on that topic. He and a guy, Ruderoni, I'm probably mispronouncing that, but another professor, are well-published, over 20 articles in journals, all peer-reviewed, saying that pink salmon, by their sheer number, outcompete Chinook and Chum in the wild. One of them, they have the advantage of hatchery behind them. So it's what's the word? It's just really raises suspicion if you look at when the Gulf of Alaskan hatcheries reached full production on pink salmon. Just happens to be right around 2000, the year 2000, and the year 2000 is essentially when Chinook salmon collapsed in Alaska. Very, very coincidental. And that's just exactly what they're saying. And if you know, chum have been in decline since the late 80s, 87 to be precise. And so there's the other issue is the Asian and Russian hatcheries basically are focused on chum salmon, and so the Asian chum level is gained in proportion over the Western Alaska Chum salmon over the years. You know, you can go back into the 80s and look at the kite studies, and then the 1994 was the first genetic study, and then there's a 97 genetic study, WASIP, and there's one going on today, and it's a stair step of Western Alaska chums going down and Asian chums going up. So there's, that again is, suggests a competition issue. The shrinking of all the Alaskan salmon, both wild and hatchery raised, is another thing that indicates a lack of feed. And so, all those things make the idea that the hatchery production is impacting wild stock believable. Hasn't really been proven, but it's highly suspicious. So that, I suspect, this summer will reach a crescendo. And I would, a number of us are very discouraged that the Board of Fish didn't anticipate the testimony they did at the Ariane fishery, and so they, because it went 2 days longer than they thought it would, they decided they would skip the board's review of hatcheries this year. So if you're a conspiracy theorist like me, that's very frustrating. It's not a good thing. So I think that's the end of my report. In other words, I didn't do very well at the board meetings, but I tried. So. Okay. So with that, I'll ask Sarah to step in and talk about wildlife.
Thank you, yeah. So I guess I have the sheet I've handed out to you guys. Unfortunately, it wouldn't be available online to folks, but and just so the public can have time to comment too, I think maybe I'll just touch on the two major things really quick, and then everything else that kind of informed the proposals that the AC has kind of mentioned over the past few months. I've gathered some information that might help inform some of your proposal ideas as you're drafting those. But I did want to focus on page 2. There's our summary of new surveys. So about, last week, we were able to finish an abundance survey in 22B and E. It's kind of like everything north of the kids there. And basically what we found was that the population is stable. Nothing's changed, kind of what we expected. But, so that is on page 2. And there probably won't be any changes to the quota in 22D Cusatrin, given where the bull cow ratios are right at our management objective of 30 bulls per 100 cows from our fall survey. Not much is going to change for Cusatrin. 22D remainder still has really low bull cow ratios that hasn't changed at all, even since we've reduced the harvest. So there is a chance that might go down, but nothing's been official yet. But yeah, stability in the population up there, which is better than a decrease, I guess. But and otherwise, I did want to mention with muskox, after the meeting in December, we, in a public comment that we received and the AC's letter to the commissioner, and all sorts of conversations from that, we did increase the quota for muskox and 22C specifically. So folks that did get a TX 095 or 096 permit for 22C are going to see two different things. So the quota, the allocation is now up to 30. So before it was 4 permits for that outer gnome area and 5 permits for the inner gnome area. And now it's 15 and 15 for a total of 30. And second, the bag limit is going to be any muskox. So we set a quota of 10 cows for all of 22C. So once we hit that 10 cows between TX095-096, we will issue an emergency order to close the bag limit for cows, but you can still hunt for bulls. So there's no need to be concerned about the bull season closing early. That will still be the same, but we do have a cow bag limit, and we're hoping maybe that'll encourage folks to get permits and or harvest muskox in August and September when normally bulls are rutting and don't taste very good and aren't harvested, and maybe just kind of start addressing urban muskox around Nome. So that's a start, but those of you that have good food permits will see a little bit of a change.
Go ahead.
So I'm a little curious how you're going to manage this. You know, we have X amount of animals in this area,
mm-hmm.
and if you go back in history, Fish and Game managed the bulls to death, and basically, you know, the herd was quit or whatever, it stalled for a long, long time, and we're still trying to come out of that. And you're talking about raising the limit. 21 animals in this little tiny area. My suggestion is I hope you have a plan, because if you don't, you're going to ruin this area. I mean, all of us are excellent hunters, and we're going to wipe the bulls out.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, let me I don't know how much more Sarah has to do with her report, but maybe, well, I'll put it out for discussion, but do we want to do bears real quick before we jump into muskox? I have a number of proposals that I'd like to bring up on muskox, so I'll leave it up to you guys to make that statement.
You know, as we move through this stuff, we're going to lose momentum, and issues are going to get dropped, and the top's going to get launched, so...
No, we can't take back action. So, I think that's... I think all our comments have to be comments, and not... We can't... Individually, we can write proposals. As a group, we can speak for the group. So this is more of a brainstorming session. And so, having said that, I think... I'd like to talk about muskox and individual. Okay, so are you?
I wanted to plant that seed because
okay. So I was shocked also by at our last discussion with people in the room. We talked about reducing the abundance in the inner portion of 22C, not the entire 22C, particularly around Nome and the 10-mile radius around Nome. So this went much further than I thought it would. I agree with Tom that this is a recipe for collapse. I think this is, unless there's an ulterior motive, this is something that had better only last a year or so. We did write a letter, this body, saying that we thought the population could be reduced in the near home vicinity. It wasn't my understanding we were talking about 22C. We were talking about the shotgun. Mm-hmm. So there's that. And then, a more of a mechanical question. So right now we're required to reduce, or to, do away with the trophy potential. So we have to turn in the horn tips. Does that apply to females?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. For what it's worth, I think under tier one, the trophy destruction makes good sense. We demonstrated why that was good in the past, but under Tier 2, there's not that potential. And so I think under Tier 2, the trophy destruction is much, much less useful. And that's the personal thing that I'm under about it.
And I agree with you. I've always opposed this.
Yeah,
I agree with that as well. But, so.
And I plan, just full disclosure, I'm going to probably write a proposal to get away from the shotgun retirement. You know, I find that impractical, and I embarrass myself too many times by having to perforate some poor animal until he bled to death. That's inhumane, and that's embarrassing for me. And I just think that's a one-shot kill is what I strive for. And I would hope everybody else does too. So. So we're just having a work session. We don't have a forum, but thanks for showing up. So, Georgie Brandon is here. We're discussing those guys and we haven't really got into anything else yet.
I'll share some of these. I know that we're not voting on anything right now, but as kind of, for those on the phone, this is Jacob Mannix speaking, but kind of twofold thing for some of these potential proposals that I may submit on muskox for the Tier 2 hunts. One of the reasons is because I've had some frustrations with Tier 2 hunt for many years, and then based off public testimony at the last meeting, I'm kind of putting some thought into this stuff as well. So with the increase in the bag limit for 095 and 096, I'm kind of in agreement that particularly the 10 cows seems to be a little on the high side for what I would have liked to see. So one of my potential proposals that I'll put in is just to establish a cow season and separate that from the existing bull season, and that would be to run for both 095 and 096, so long as those hunts are there. That season runs from August 1st to October 31st. Primary reason behind that is because if this is a reaction to try to reduce the number of muskox in and around Nome, then it needs to be specifically targeted. We're not going to do anything to deter muskox presence if we're shooting cows in March. And so the times of the year when people are not shooting muskox because of bad tasting bulls, that's the time of year when muskox are in rut and causing problems. And there should be, if the intent is to use hunting pressure to deter muskox presence, then I think it needs to be restricted to a certain time frame. Not as part of this proposal because it's separate, but I would like to see that lowered. My initial thought, and I didn't really communicate this to the department at all, but was to see an absolute maximum of 6 cows, 2 for each month, 2 for August, 2 for September, 2 for October. And that's primarily out of just concern for the population. I don't want to see a reduction in hunting opportunity for muskox. I don't want that to be the primary goal. In the spirit of addressing some of the public testimony at the last meeting, I realize that people don't want muskox in their yards, and I can sympathize with that 100%. However, I also don't want to see us fall any lower below the ANS, restrict additional opportunity, or risk of the potential for there to be no hunt, or for the OSM folks on the call, or potential federal takeover of this hunt, because that has happened in the past. So those are some of my concerns, but yeah, so one of my proposal ideas is to establish that cow season, because
I believe that this is should be very specific and targeted. Another one, if I can continue, unless anybody has questions. And this one is likely going to be a little bit more contentious, but I'm going to throw it out there as well. One of the underlying things that I heard from a lot of the public testimony at the last meeting has been one of my frustrations as well, is the just by nature of the Tier 2 system, the limited number of people that can benefit from this resource. So my other proposal would be to establish a multi-year bag limit for muskox in all Unit 22 Tier 2 hunts. So that would be one bull muskox or one muskox, one legal animal, depending on whether or not we have cows available for harvest, every 2 years. Reason for that is because I have not drawn a Tier 2 muskox permit, so there's some selfishness out of this proposal, but on the flip side, I would see it as potentially doubling the number of people that can benefit from this resource, and I think that that would go a long way towards increasing people's appreciation of having these animals on the landscape, not seeing them just as a nuisance. And as an alternative to what Charlie has as well, I do have a third that I've thought of that would at least partially address the weapons restriction. And then if that is that if we can't, through whatever mechanism, get rid of the weapons restriction, we redraw the boundary. Where I live out in Dexter, I'm looking at muskox that are across the Nome River, 2.5 miles from my house, that are still in 095. And as I've said in previous meetings before, any moose that pops up there on September 1st, somebody can shoot with a whatever rifle they want. Any bear, someone can shoot with whatever rifle they want. And there really is not, they're not going to hit my house. I'm not so concerned about that. So I would definitely entertain redrawing of the proposal or redrawing of the boundaries for that weapons restriction as well. And I have an idea of where that would be too, but subject to more discussion.
And my frustrating point is still the harvest percentage success, right? And I think
so President Drew kind of.
Yes, this is Drew McCann. My frustration with the percentage of successful harvest with those, and there's only a limited number of permits, and consistently the harvest is 62% average over those 5 years. It's been that there is something limited, and I know you guys have tools and may look at those in the future for end of season, ordering out some of those to be harvested or some option for those that didn't get the permit or that didn't get to harvest. I'd be more interested on, I think we all know that this is obviously a call from the public testimony and what happened, and so I don't see this as a long-term thing that Fish and Game would be doing every year for the permits. I think it's kind of like what we discussed with them, using that increase to make the muskox around known a little bit more uncomfortable. So I don't see it as a long-term thing that Fish and Game is going to do. The piece with the success rate, and I wish I knew muskox populations in the immediate Nome area. They've obviously grown on the peninsula, right? We opened up the harvest east of the Darby's last year or 2 years ago. So muskox population overall isn't declining, right? I don't see major issues with a couple of years of higher permits issued in the area.
If I can jump in here one more time, just to tag on to what Drew's saying, I think it's just important to note, at the last meeting, there was a lot of public comment for increased hunting, and we've seen that reaction, and we have increased hunting. But I think there's something very important that was said at the last meeting that we should, just for the sake of discussion, needs to be brought up again, and that is just that hunting is one piece of this. Tony Bourne mentioned at the last meeting that There are a lot of other factors that may play a part in why muskox are so close to town. One of that is just available habitat. It's one of the first places that thaws. We have, any given day during the summer, you can drive down the road and you know exactly whose yards muskox are going to be in. There's a reason for that. Mining tailings also clear off earlier. I mean, I don't think it's reasonable to expect all the burden of managing animals to be placed on fish and game. I don't think that it's reasonable to expect that increasing hunting is simply going to fix this problem. It's one part. If the community of Nome would like to get serious about addressing this issue, then it needs to be a multi-stakeholder, more nuanced approach that brings more people to the table. But otherwise, we will just shoot ourselves out of a huntable population of muskox.
So my feeling is that when we had the tier one hunt, it was widely abused by some state officials, and it was just a sad state of affairs. I really think Jake was onto something there with the alternating permit award. It would affect me. I'm very fortunate and tend to get one every time, or at least 90% of the time. But if we want people to take ownership of this population, we have to share it more evenly. And so I think that's an idea that we're considering.
So, you know, getting back to your percentage then, 60-some%, and if we look at the increase of from 9 to 30 animals, and the harvest rate is 60-some%, that's a little over 20 animals that are going to get harvested annually if we're on track. And that's why I say we've seen this decline happen back in the day. I remember 30, 40 muskox getting killed out of Coosa Creek. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we wipe out the bulls and all of a sudden the herds took a hard hit. So hopefully Fish and Game has an action plan and a way to address. There's going to be a big hit on these local herds. And, you know, like any animals in hunting, they're all dangerous. You have to be careful. I live on Animal Mountain. I have muskox in my yard, but my dog's still alive because I pay attention to it. My grandkids are running around the place. If there's muskox, they come in the house. We all have to be respectful. So anyway, that Fish and Game needs to pay attention because 30 animals in this little area is going to hammer that population. The other issue I want to talk about is the two-year thing. You know, I think maybe we should go a stretch further and look at the region and see how White Mountain, Golovin, Elam, how those guys are doing in getting permits. You know, Tom Gray has been very fortunate over this hunt. I think I've had 1 year that I didn't get a permit. But if we're going to re-evaluate and readjust this thing, you know, I have sympathy for the villagers. And I'm all about managing the resource, not my opportunity to get an animal. If we're going to go back and reevaluate it, you know, we need to look at this region as a whole and make sure that people are, if it's opportunity, everybody gets that opportunity, not just the Nome guys or just the whoever guys. You know, the villagers are way more important than Tom Gray because the income in the village is so low. I can go to store and get beef. They can't. So I guess I look at it a little different, and I agree that the process, the Tier 2 process, has not been fair to a lot of people. But on the same token, if we're going to go this route and change it, let's make sure we're taking care of our people, the villages, and not just Nome. I mean, that, to me, a two-year thing, first thing I thought of, well, I'm going to have my grandkids all apply, I'm going to stack the debt. That's wrong. That's not the way to think about it. We should be thinking, you know, maybe White Mountain gets 5 animals and Golden gets 5 animals or whatever. I mean, maybe a process that's, if we're going to change this process, we should be thinking of how can we help the villagers? How can we help everybody? I'm a little bit frustrated. I talked to, I want to say Sarah, and somebody applying for a Tier 2 hunt from Kotzebue because of their fuel prices can decongre out of getting a permit. Is that fair? That's not fair. So anyway, I agree that, you know, Charlie and I have had a run up for 30 years. We get to 25 years. But times are going to change, and let's be fair about the change.
Yeah, so to that, I guess I'd just say, I mean, I hear what you're saying for sure. And like I said, I've never drawn a Tier 2 permit. And even if it does go a multi-year bag limit, I probably still have a few more years before I could get one. But as far as, you know, helping out the villages, I don't think that's unreasonable, but I'm trying to come up with something that's like doable in the near future. So Brandon, I would pose a question to you and just see if there's anything like, and Sarah, I suppose, fishing game and otherwise resources that tells people how to apply for these Tier 2 hunts, because they're not the most difficult process, but if you've never done it, then you may not know how.
So understanding there's the concern around knowing, you know, something that we need to address. This is Brandon, by the way, sorry. I'm going to use the apples and oranges, but like the cow moosin that took place and where that, in my opinion, led us to where we're at today, you know, with the moose population. If we start hunting cow muskox, is it going to go that way?
Depends how far we go.
Yeah. But it's my understanding, what I've heard from other hunters, like with the moose, when you start doing that, they remember it, and they don't ever want to come back. Maybe that's the solution for our own. Maybe. I don't know. But I've heard from other hunters, different people, wherever those cow hunts were for moose, they had never come back. Or very slow to. Again, is it the answer? Is it not the answer? The definitely feel, just like you were mentioning, Jacob, the redrawing the boundary lines for this, the restriction on weapons, I agree. You know, out there where it's a little bit farther, I don't feel that it's necessary. They should be able to use whatever other hunter uses for moose, bear, whatever. If not an issue, I mean, here on, to me, where I think this boundary line should be, wherever it is, in, around the immediate vicinity of Nome, where this restriction should be in place. I mean, obviously, we don't want, you know, somebody hunting muskox right back here with a shotgun. You know, I mean, where it's allowable, have it there, outside of that, change it. In the essence of doing something, yes, something needs to be done, upping the quota, by 10, I don't know. Again, I don't know if that's the answer. I honestly don't think, could be, but is it too far? The Tier 2 part itself, I do have several issues with it. But an individual has come up to me, that have lived in Nome 40, 50, 60 years. They put in for the permit, they don't get drawn, but then somebody who just moved here within the last 10 years or less get the permit. There's a flaw in the scoring system. I'm just going to say it. Somebody's outright lying on the permit. And to me, I believe there's ways to check it. You know, when they claim residency in the state, driver license, you know, like the jiffy chair, there's ways to investigate it to, you know, I was worried about that. Harry Potter, the, how to report out the liars. but definitely something needs to be done. Maybe another route to go, maybe it's not a popular suggestion, opening up a bow hunt. The last several years I've seen more bow hunters out on the landscape. How successful they are, I don't know. But I believe these are individuals that are a little bit farther out, maybe they're going after something else. But another idea, having a time frame just for them, you know, within this KQ muskox hunt, in around 3 minutes, the known vicinity, during key times of when, you know, muskox, are doing their thing. And again, in the essence of, kind of address the concern. I know what I mean, but if it is bow only, then the particular individuals would have to get, you know, bow training. But, I mean, it's an option. It's a tool in the toolbox to try to help out with this concern.
I think I've been on that topic for a while about the application process, right? The listing of winners is made public, right? So, and that going to the application, I can't think of anything that I wouldn't want out in the public from an application standpoint. It doesn't have my social on it, doesn't have my kid's name or date of birth or whatever. So my thoughts would be you make the application public and make it accountability in that way, where that information with how many years they've hunted it, you've done it, is
crowdsourced or pooping.
On the note of tier two, I think it's important that maybe important to mention just that with this hunt in particular, there's something a little bit unique that can account for why some people that are recently to town get permits while those that have been in town longer do not. That is, it's the scoring formula that's used basically because there isn't enough hunt history for muskox in Nome that if you hunted or, you know, if you answer those questions and you maybe score kind of high on them, if someone from a village or another community in Alaska that has higher costs of fuel, that will give you more points on the application than me. Because Nome has a lower cost of fuel and we don't have the hunt history to make up for it. But it's not a perfect system, but that is one of the ways, that is how it is scored. It's just,
that's why it has to do with human free permits.
Right, that's why, or some other.
Really. There is a flaw in the system, though. I've seen just in the last 2 years, hunters get permits that have not hunted. I mean, they're first time hunters to shoot a muskox. I've got, you know, grandkids that, I got one grandkid that's 18 years old that can use 18 years because he's 8 from my animal.
Mm-hmm.
And so he has way more history than, and granddaughter, I mean, just family members. I've got sons and daughters that had the same points I do because I share my animal. And yet, they're getting beat out because of the scoring system.
Yeah.
I, you know, I, if we're going to be fair about these animals and sharing them, and we're going to go to a new system, let's make sure that we're fixing it right so everybody's got a chance. You know, the problem I see with the system right now is there's no accountability. Anybody can put in a permit and put any amount of years on it, and there's no accountability. Is this true?
So, maybe I'm misunderstanding, but I thought, oh, the Nome area got this in place because of the customary traditional use history. Well, so, but wait, it was, they cut you. They don't have the customary traditional use for this resource. How are they getting,
beautiful.
Yeah. I mean, the to me, the price of gas part shouldn't, you have this a factor, but it's a factor for our region, not to me, and not for 23, because that's the Gatsu region. They don't have a customary, or maybe I'm wrong.
It's just the way that Alaska resident systems priority works, but it's equal for all Alaskan residents.
The Nome Sewer Council has got the customary tradition on the books. They do not.
But it's correct. Good for the population, not the people. So it gets a little weird because since every resident has equal opportunity, it ends up being the scoring system. And like everybody's been saying, because Nome's score is lower for cost of fuel and gas, there's no priority because it's local. It's the priority that goes to whose cost of living is most expensive.
Well, there's another question. Yeah. There's another question that says, how many years have you consumed Musquashin from this population? Which is that effect?
And lived
population.
And spent time in that area. I mean, there's a whole barrage of questions.
And because we don't have the hunt history, that's why the gas and groceries score higher than those questions. So that's all I'm saying. And then I answer your question, Brandon. Sarah hit on it pretty well. But that's the difference between state and federal system. That's why we all say that the federal system has got
splits. This population isn't high enough where it can support Cotabena and Barrow and Fairbanks and Bethel and everybody else. We set this up for us, our region, not other regions. Again, I don't know if I'm wrong.
The board did set this up. And now they're thinking, now they're reconsidering. So if you look at what has just happened over in Eastern Arkansas, it's not a subsistence fund. This is a sticky wicket. If we go into this, we need to think about what we're doing.
Yeah.
There's no guarantees. And so, at least in the state system, there's pressure to make this a tier 100 kit.
Yes. Okay, but maybe that's what I'm confusing it. It seems not a subsistence fund, this question is a support fund.
Well, I don't want to go there. And if the population expands a little bit, then it goes into tier 1 again.
Okay.
It went into a drawing hunt, I think, not a tier 1 hunt. When we had that fiasco and everything, we all went up there and shot the entire herd. Tom referred to that. And that's, we want to avoid that for sure. But the tier 1 hunt thing would really open it up too. And I think it'd have to be a tier 1 drawing hunt, or else we'll just drop the population again. I mean, 1 year we could wipe it out again. And then at one point I just gotta say that the Musquashin are a little bit different than other species of big game. It's important to have a herd goal to defend the herd from bears in particular, but dogs too, or you could say wolves. But yeah, that's what the function of a big bull and a harem kind of situation is to to protect the western animals. And if we blow away all the big herd bulls, we can expect more predation, which just doesn't benefit any of his hunters.
Okay, so I'm glad you touched on that. So I do agree with Tony a little bit that there's good browse here, you know, someone else sooner. But at the same time, I firmly believe this. Why the muskox, the main reason I believe they're here for around town is because of all the predators outside of St. Louis. The 22C bear hunt alone, you know, we've seen drastic changes in the last, you know, 10 years, at least, you know, along that neck part, the opportunities, you know, and that I submitted the two proposals, you know, to help change that, you know, to get us to where we're at today. The latest bear population survey last year, 2 years ago, still showed that the bear population is on the rise. Wolves, we have wolves just outside of them here, you know, that, in my opinion, are pushing these muskox right into town. Now, the bears don't come in, the wolves don't come in because they don't want to get shot. And there's nothing, you know, we just heard it, that the hunters can use whatever they want. You know, maybe it's legal, they can use whatever they want. But that's my opinion, why muskox are right here in town, because they don't want to see Junior get eaten by a big bear or pack of wolves. You know, they're smart, they're not, you know, they're going to go where it's safe. Right here in home is safe. Taking that a little further on the countryside, I don't know how many times I've seen cows, muskox, reindeer, caribou, where they're just on the run. Tongues hanging out, you know, foaming at the mouth, but then you look behind them and they got, you know, one or two bears in hot pursuit, or back of wolves, even, hot pursuit. I was going to say the moose, you know, where they do the surveys and they do the weight surveys, you know, someone is showing that they're overweight. Maybe that's the reason why. That they cannot simply just, once they sit down and enjoy a meal. Why? Because they're being chased around the clock, you know, to where they can't hardly even eat. On Sinooks, there's a couple big bears that were taken out in the last couple of years. One spring went down, twin calves, I think it was 14 of them. That's the most I've ever seen.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's like three or four that make it through the summer, you know, but then the other times, again, just watching moose run their ass off. A bear in hot pursuit. Again, predators, they're out there pushing this car here in town. The emergency order closure, in my opinion, purple bear, unwarranted. In 22C, that should not be there. I don't know if that was an emergency proposal or something by the department in the essence of trying to control the bear harvest. How that came about, I don't recall. But again, I don't feel it's warranted. Bear population is on the rise, and in my opinion, it's just out of control.
We should move on. I know we have at least one audience member that really wants to talk about bear. And so I think.
Excuse me, Charlie?
Yes.
We had some folks join. I just wanted to identify them.
Okay.
The phone number, last three digits, 275. Can we have your name, please? I don't know if they can hear me. What about 322?
Hi, I'm Shauna Karpovich. I am the Region 5 Research Coordinator at Fish and Game. Sorry I'm late.
Oh, no worries. And there is a BL PAR. What's the full name on that, please?
Hi, this is Bryn Parr, Research Biologist out of Nome, tuning in.
Okay. Thank you. And then one more number. There's a 993. I'm not too sure who's. I guess if they speak, then we'll get their names. Sorry for the interruption.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just kind of interest of fairness. We like to know who we're talking in front of. But anyway, Brown Bear, I guess, Mr. Smith, did you want to speak to this?
Yeah, through the chair, Mr. Lean and board members, my name is James Smith. I'm a resident of Alaska. I'm also a registered guide. I reside in Anchorage. My wife is born and raised here in Alaska. We have one son. He's born in Alaska, and we have our second one on the way. And Alaska is home for me, even though I moved here out of state. But I just wanted to introduce myself. I moved to Alaska in 2004, moved to Fairbanks. I graduated from the University of Alaska Fairbanks in 2009, and I moved down to Anchorage right after, and I've been in the guide industry full-time since then. I guide up in the Brooks Range for Thor Stacy and the Anwar, who's also our guide lobbyist, and I also guide for Jake Fletcher down on Kodiak, and he's also on the Board of Game. And then I also run my hunts out of 22 Bravo, and I'm also permitted to hunt 22 Alpha, but I'm right on the border between 22 Bravo and 22 Alpha, but most of my operations are in 22 Bravo. I wanted to, and I've talked to, you know, Sarah, I've talked to a few board members, I've talked to a couple of the guys. There's two proposals I'm going to be working on, or I am working on. And the first one is removing 22C and having that area, that GMU subunit, as its own on a separate bear regulation. You know, whether we keep that as DB-685 and Sarah and the Fish and Game work on the allocations, that's up to them. But my main focus is on 22 Bravo. And I know I've kind of explained to everybody what's in my situation, what the situation I'm in, but I guess I'll say it again. Right now I have six hunters booked, and a couple of them went through the draw, and then the other ones did the undersubscribed application. One of my hunters might not be able to show up this spring because of health issues, and right now I cannot get another permit to book another hunter. That being said, if you look at the history of DB-685, they've issued 27 tags, and in the last 3 years, all the tags are spoken for. So even if they did fix something like, you know, put in a proxy to transfer these tags, right now, myself, Mr. Gray, and Chris Zimmerman, we cannot get another tag right now. And that's very frustrating because I know the amount of bears in the area. I've been there for several years. I used to guide in 22 Alpha, and then I moved into 22B for my business. And I guess what I wanted to ask for suggestions or whatever is to form this proposal. But I think the way to go so we're not in this situation again is turning all of 22 Bravo into a registration hunt, and I'm just throwing numbers out, but they issue 27, and I think 35 is a good number to start with. And once 35 bears are harvested, they shut the season down. And I talked to Tom Gray. I know his concerns. I have concerns. I talked to Chris. He has concerns, but he also agrees with it, but I just wanted to see what you guys think. And, you know, I've talked to Sarah, and I'd like to know what the number of non-resident next to kin harvests are before I actually put a number down for that registration, closure. And, as far as that, that's all I have. I work on federal lands. I know all about allocations. The guys I work for are all about management. I focus on mature boars. And when it comes to bears, I'm a true trophy hunter. That being said, I don't think this is overly asking based on the bear population. You know, I have friends, Mike and Stan Morgan, who are really good friends. You know, Ruby is from Koyuk, and she's told me, James, there are so many bears, shoot more bears. So that being said, I just wanted to thank you guys for the opportunity to talk. And if you guys have any questions or concerns, please ask.
Mr. Smith, just to clarify, this is Jacob Mannix. You're talking about non-resident bear hunt only.
Correct. So the DB-685 right now is only for non-residents. So I think within that pool, and I think Sarah could correct me, but within that DB-685, that includes 22C and 22B, and that also includes non-resident clients and also non-resident next of kin.
Thanks. Yeah, I just wanted to clarify for everybody in the room when you're talking about limiting tags, that, you know, or setting a number for tags that
it would actually be an increase of tags for non-residents. And the three main operators right now in 22 Bravo are myself, Mr. Gray, and Mr. Zimmerman.
Okay, thank you.
You're a piece of that action, but do you have 100% success? Or, I mean, is there what's your success percentage?
You know, the last 2 years I've had 100% opportunity. I had, unfortunately, two guys last year that wounded bears. It was a scope malfunction on both guns. That being said, I've been pretty much 4-for-6, 5-for-6, and I think 1 year I went 6-for-6.
Okay. So do you have a question there about the numbers?
Yeah, so I pulled the numbers for that 22C and 22B combined non-resident harvest through that DB-685, and it's about 8 bears annually, so that's non-resident hunt for 22B and C. So of those 8, it looks like one max comes out of 22C each year. I've only got a couple harvests on the books for 22B East and then 5 for 22B West. But as far as the next of kin data, I have that as maybe 1 or 2 folks a year hunting with their next of kin. So that's their cousin, uncle, some sort of relative. And that ends up being maybe 9-10% of the harvest for non-residents are guiding with their next of kin.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, the easiest thing to do is just say, hey, let's up the DB-685 number. But my concern is with that is, and I could do this, this is not me, but my concern is there's a loophole for an outfitter to get mad at another outfitter and just all of a sudden submit a bunch of non-resident, whether it be, family members out of state, and then all of a sudden these tags are locked up. And if I only have 2 books, say in January, and I all of a sudden have 4 booked before I go to Kodiak, I can't get a tag. So I'm trying to fix a loophole where it doesn't cause tension amongst us guides, where I could flood the system and then only actually take 4 non-resident clients, and then the rest of it be my family members. And yeah, we have to pay for a hunting license, but to me, that's not right. And I don't know how much that goes on, but I also know that guys are booking hunts, and if they're not filling their tags, that tag is spoken for, and I can't even get another tag when the population is stable.
22B.
Okay, can I ask a couple questions? This is Tom Gray.
Yep, this is Tom Gray. I'm one of the guys in this area, and I tried to go meet with Sarah this morning, and she was having internet problems. We have these guide use areas. I used to have 22C is a guide use area. Then I had 22B east or west. And I do have 22D east. I gave up C and took a guide use area up by Schirchmerath. These guide use areas are about 2 million acres each.
Yep.
And you know, Jim, the struggle, I've been trying to think of how this is going to impact, quote, the ranger, or not the ranger, the guiding industry, and more importantly, the resource. You know, I talked to you about managing the resource, and as far as I'm concerned, Fish and Game is not managing the resource, and it's kind of a free-for-all out there. One thing I try to find out from Sarah is, of the non-residents, how many of those are guide hunts? And, you know, a couple of years ago, I took 10 bears out of my area. You're taking as many as 6 hunters. You know, a normal year, right now, I think I've got 5 guys booked for this year. A normal year for me is 5 or 6 guys. And that's kind of all I really want. I don't, you know, until my son gets a guide license, he gets super involved. I don't want to go anymore than that. But I want to put a good show on. I want to get good bears for these guys. And I have been harping and bitching for years that our bear population may be still up there, that everybody sees, and you know, the more bear problems we have, the more bitching, the more Fishing Game gets hammered. But I'm out there hunting them, and our bear sizes have taken a dramatic hit. And you know, when I got my license 20 years ago, man, I was getting big bears right and left all the time. Today, we're lucky to get 7, 7.5 foot bears. That's a decent bear in our area nowadays. And that's not what the guiding industry needs. So I worry about, well, we're going to fix the problem and hand out more tags so the guys can go do their thing. And yet the resource is getting beat to crap. That's, you know, I want to turn over my operation to my son, and he can run a guiding operation. I want to manage my area, but I, you know, Jim, last couple, I talked to you yesterday or something, and I almost called you back last night because I was thinking, boy, if we add more numbers to this thing, we're probably going to take away from that the resource is going to get negatively impacted. And this year is going to be a darn good example of how the public can impact the bears. We've got so much snow, the bears are going to take a major hit this year. I just cringe. Man, I'm hoping for sunshine and melting, and because if it stays cloudy and raining, this snow is going to stay forever. So anyway, I can understand, and I'll go back to 22C. I was a little bit frustrated when 22C went to a 2-bear-a-year area or something. And then Fishing Game, after they killed 25 bears, they shut it down. Well, you can't hunt in 22C. Well, if that's the mentality, let's go back to a bear every year or a bear every 4 years.
I totally agree with that.
Through emergency order, you know, again, nobody, I'm a smoking gun. Nobody likes to talk to me about bears because I have a different outlook on them. And, but the bottom line is, managing bears. I mean, that's what I think we have to look at. And to put two guides in 22 West, and Tom Gray takes 10 bears and 5 bears a year, and another client takes 5 bears a year, you know, and then we got the public out there in the meantime shooting as many as they, I mean, they don't care with the size or anything. They'll shoot 6-foot bears, 5-foot bears. They don't, and they're getting away with it. So, you know, I come back to the resource. Number one, that 2 million acres can't handle 2 guides. Number, that's first and foremost. And Jim, you're not seeing the 2 guide issue because you're kind of over in limbo and nobody wants to go there right now. But beware and be careful. This registration hunt, you're going to open the door for a lot of people to come in there. So anyway, I'm going to listen and you give me a call after the fact, Jim, if you want. But I'm going to drag my feet a little bit here on this thing.
Yeah, well, I really do appreciate your concerns. I right now the whole area DB685, I'll just focus on 22 Bravo. Nothing is stopping another registered guide from moving in there right now, which would absolutely suck if one did. But I do have faith with BLM and DNR, who I actually get my permits through. And I think that's where I'm confident the management will be good in the area. But until then, I just know what I'm seeing. I know what Chris has told me he's seeing. And it's just one of those things that, I'm in a situation where that's very, very frustrating right now.
So Jim, I have to intercede here. BLM is not going to stop another guide. I'm a licensed guide in your area. All I have to do is go get a state permit, and I can be guiding right next year. There's nothing to stop other guides coming in, and that's what happened to me. You're talking about this Chris Zimmerman guy. He came in and stepped right in the middle of my hunting operation, and BLM let it happen. The state let it happen. So don't think that they're going to help you manage your area. All right? The guides are going to look, and they're going to come. Believe me.
And you might be actually right, you know, and if the time comes and you say, well, James, I told you, I guess that's something I'll have to deal with at the time. But, you know, where I'm at now, I utilize the river. I float down the river. I do fly-in ridgetop backpack hunts. We do base camp hunts. And in that time, I have never seen anybody in the area. We had one local fly around in a Super Cub, but I don't know what they were doing. But anyways, And ultimately, you know, I don't do moose hunts in there, but the moose population is definitely low, and it is a fact, you know, you harvest more bears, the moose population will increase. But I do not run any guided moose hunters. It's just strictly grizzly.
All right. Are you seeing, this is Drew McCann, are you seeing the same thing as Tom as far as the size of bears go? Are you getting anything bigger than 7.5 foot?
You know, I tell most of my hunters if you have an opportunity to have 7.5 foot bear on day one, there's nothing wrong with shooting, you know, a 7.5 foot bear. You know, when I used to guide in 22 Alpha, we got used to killing a lot of 8-footers, 8.5-footers, and a lot of hunters expected that. But what I tell most of my hunters, there's absolutely nothing wrong with shooting a 7.5-foot bear, that's a boar, that's in this prime.
I have a question for Sarah. I think that, so basically you're kind of managing bear for maximum sustained yield as opposed to for a trophy.
Yeah, so our management objectives kind of go according to the number or the percent of sows in the harvest.
Mm-hmm.
And once we get at or above 50%, that's when things become concerning. That hasn't happened yet in 22 Bravo. It has in 22C and 22D the last year, couple of years, but not in B. But then a lot of the heart, or sometimes a lot of our feelings of how the population is doing kind of go off of like last fall, we had a lot of yearlings in the harvest, so that's a little bit concerning out in B West and C, but otherwise, yeah, the school data, things look pretty consistent. The females have dropped in B. They went down to like an average of 16 inches. Usually it's around 20. But yeah, we kind of watch these things and look for multiple years of trends. This is the first year that tank happened, but yeah, kind of difficult to manage bears without population estimates.
And I'd like to say a couple other things. One thing, where I'm at on BLM land, and I have a permit on state land, by no means is this my area. I just want to clarify that. This is not a federal area. I do not look at this. This is my area. This is where I'm permitted to hunt. I've asked BLM for 10 grizzly permits. They allocated it. They've also said, hey, if you want to take more, we'll authorize that. But, you know, I don't. I haven't come close to 10. But we cannot control the locals. We cannot control the residents. And they can go hunt, and I'm all for that. I've always got along with residents when I'm out up in Anwar on Kodiak National Wildlife Refuge as well. But it's like I told Mr. Gray and also Chris, you know, we as professionals, I am a professional hunting guide. I hold myself very high, as in my standards. And, you know, we're not dealing with 14 other outfitters like they are in 19C, and they just shut down the sheep season. We're dealing with 3 outfitters. Like, we should be able to get along and move whatever happened in the past and move on. And in the end, if I'm used to taking 8 hunters, I have a responsibility to decrease my take, even if it's going to take a dent in my pocket. I have a responsibility to back off to 2 or 3 and do that for a couple years and wait till the population starts increasing.
I guess this is fairly, I'm having something I just need to think longer about it. I do believe that the locals there in Koyak in particular would like to see a larger bear harvest by whatever means, and I don't think you're harming the resource in any way. I'm still wobbling around about, you know, greater harvest in one location, how does that affect harvest on the other side of that unit?
Yeah.
And it seems like there could be an effect there, but I don't know that there is. I mean, most of what you're saying makes good sense to me, but I'm a little bit, I'm going to have to do some research. So that's it.
Well, thank you guys for your time. I really do appreciate it.
Oh, one more, please.
So, this is Brandon. I was a former subsistence director at Quirk.
the reports that we get from across the region is that, you know, there's more and more bears all the time. The recent bear surveys, you know, indicating the same thing. You know, so maybe just like Charlie, I need to do a little more research on it. I mean, it's, it, for the most part, it sounds like a good thing. Definitely not wanting to cause hardship or fighting amongst, you know, the guides. You know, but even that, I feel there's a way to handle that. So I guess kind of up front, I guess we're paying like hand for it, but not wanting to cause issues with, amongst the guides.
And I totally appreciate that.
The last comment suggestion, I guess, and this is me not knowing how you guys operate, you know, but just a suggestion, knowing where you're at, anytime you can do local hire to help out with any of your operation, even out in the field, I strongly encourage that. You know, our villages are, you know, very low income, you know, no jobs. So in just a suggestion, not something that, you know, mandatory, but anytime you can do local hire, I strongly encourage that.
And I really do appreciate that. I talked to Stan Morgan on a regular basis. He recommended Jacob Hannon, so I called Jacob Hannon. And, you know, I'm a backpacker at heart. But that being said, you know, I've also thought about exploring the, you know, snow machine route and do a couple before my main season on snow machines. And I contacted Jacob and asked him if he would be interested, and he said totally on board, and, you know, logistics, getting snow machines out and all that. So I have been thinking about that and definitely being proactive about it. So
one last thing, if you don't mind. This is Tom Gray again.
Yeah.
You know, you talked about you're the only guys, and you know, you and I have talked quite a bit, and one thing I'd like to leave you with is I'm feeling the impacts of too many guides. I've felt that impact for a few years now. And in reality, you right now are feeling the impacts of too many guides by not having permits available. And be careful what you dream for, because I don't know, you know, I just go fishing game say that their female bear's skulls went down to an average of 16 from 20. 16 is a barely, shoot, that's a young bear. That's a tiny bear. And, you know, we as guides need to be looking at bears up around 23. You know, I've had small bears before, but, you know, it's the choice. I leave it up to the client once we're in the heat of the battle. But the point I'm trying to make is I'm seeing smaller bears. I'm seeing guide impacts. And in reality, you need to admit that you're seeing impacts from the guides because you can't get a permit. And is what you're proposing going to, number one, fix your problem? And number two, what is that going to do to the resource? And
I guess
at the resource across the board, you know, not only in your area, you have a unique area. You don't have the known crowd hunting there. You don't have English people coming up and hunting there. You're in your own little world right now, but be careful.
Oh, that's all great advice. And, I guess, you know, Sarah had told us the harvest from next of kin, but I would like to know, what is the actual number of next of kin that get tags? before I make an assumption that I am having impacts of too many guides. I mean, if there's 10 next of kin individuals getting the DB-685 tags, then I would say it's not just the guides, it's 10 permits, and let's put the next of kin on a different permit system, and then I'd be fine keeping 27 tags for guides, and then we would know exactly how many tags I'm wanting and getting you and Chris. But right now we can't answer that.
Yeah, this is Sarah. It's the next of kin is as low as 0 and as high as 2. So
that's the harvest, or is that the number of tags?
That's the harvest. I guess that's the number of tags. Oh, gosh.
Yeah, so if you get a DB-685, whether you kill or not, you still are part of getting a tag taken away from the 27 tags.
Yeah, I would have to pull that up, which might take me a couple minutes, but I could find that.
And I would think it would be very easy to figure out who out of the guides, who's getting the tags?
While she's looking this up, another thing that Jim and I talked about was when Tom Gray gets a client and that permit is given to that client and he gets sick and can't make the hunt, that tag is dead. It's gone.
That's
cycle that tag. And what would it take to set it up to recycle it?
Yeah, I talked to the management coordinator, and he said if we were to have a list that was kind of made in advance, so like at the time of the draw, that maybe that could be an option. But in the situation like right now, the hunt has opened, the spring season is starting in 2 days, we can't just like reissue a tag. So it would have to be already kind of determined months and months ago before the season opens.
You issue tags July 1st. Usually my clients get their tags about mid-July to hunt on the 1st of August. I mean, the reissue, shoot, I can reissue it. Give me a list of over applicants, I can issue that tag in another hour.
Yeah, I think the thing would be like it being fair of like where everyone has a chance during the draw period in November versus like, you know, this guy can't go, I'm going to have this guy hunt instead. And then other guys don't really have the opportunity to kind of buy for a permit.
What I'm trying to get at, Sarah, is Tom Gray has five tapes, and one guy isn't going to come.
You're not asking for the 28th tag.
And all the people that apply for it, maybe pull the name out, and it's re-put out on the street. To the industry, it's hard to swallow the fact that we're losing one of the permits.
Yeah, and that, I talked to James a little bit about this. I think that is where the registration permit kind of comes into play, because we don't cap at 27 like there is now, where most of those people maybe don't necessarily harvest anyway, or maybe they don't even go hunting. The registration permit would give a little bit more flexibility where you could maybe issue, and the only thing is the season closed once the quota's hit and now you've got clients that can't come. But if we were to set the quota to be something like if the harvest is usually 15 through DB-685, maybe we make the quota somewhere around there so the harvest is the same, but then I don't know, I guess.
So the 35 is not a done deal then. You will probably close it.
We'll see when the proposal comes in what that would be like, but 35 is just what James's idea is, so that's...
Yeah, that's just an idea to be able to book hunters if somebody gets sick. I am definitely not for changing it from 27 and then 15 get killed, and then all of a sudden the season's closed. I mean, 15 bears is very easy to meet, and to me that's scarier than what it is right now.
I think it sounds like both of you have the same basis in what your request is, and it's similar to the same thing that I've asked about the end of the season with the muskox, right? We have this surplus at the end of the season that's not able to be harvested, and there's no mechanism that's being used right now to issue those.
And I'm not going to oppose what he's trying to do, but I'm going to make her accountable, and I'm going to dogbird her to make sure that my resource isn't getting eat up to them. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you, James. I think I've got to keep things going. So.
Yep. I totally appreciate it. Thank you guys for my time or for your time and allowing me to speak. I really do appreciate it.
Okay. Well, we appreciate you for participating. Thanks. I had a couple more things I wanted to throw out there for consideration. I hear through the through my friends on the Southern Northern Sound AC that they're crafting a proposal to set a minimum limit on guns to shoot moose. So I'm not sure what their numbers are or what they're going to suggest, but apparently there were some young hunters that made poor shots, and people are upset about it. So that should be on your radar. I don't know what that's going to be, and I think we'll have a chance to review their permit when it does come out, and you know, vote on it probably next fall. But you should be aware of that.
Charlie? Yeah. Since you opened the doors. James, this is Brandon. Are you still there?
Doesn't look like it. His
camera's still. Did you say James?
Yes, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Did you catch that from Charlie that the possible caliber restriction could be under your radar?
Just
for moose. Sorry.
For 22 Bravo?
For 22 D. All right, I'm sorry.
Eight.
Eight.
It could be 22 or it could be 22 A.
You know, to be honest, I don't do any moose hunts.
But, no, that's not my question. My question is, if you, just in your professional opinion, you know, if you can miss with the 223, then you can miss with the 375 H&H. Yes? No?
Sorry, I might have missed what you guys were actually talking about. I apologize.
Okay, it's not a big deal. It was just I was just trying to get further insight, further input on a caliber question.
And you're saying a 223 versus a 375?
If you can miss with a 223, you can miss with a 375 H&H.
Absolutely.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's been we'll see if it passes their AC, but there's the number of people down there that are feeling there should be some kind of either a much better hunter ed program or suggestions about what calibers are used on big game. So
That's should be on your ego.
Yeah, I don't want to get too far off in the weeds on that. I'm not going to, but I heard recently that there's kind of a cool program. I believe it's in Juneau, maybe their elementary school, that all sixth graders, at least they turned 12 at that point, as part of their curriculum, take an RN class, which I think would be awesome to figure out how to get something like that implemented in region. I know a lot of folks have hunting experience prior to turning 12, but can't hurt, and it, you know, encourages responsible use of the resource.
Oh, it stresses marksmanship.
Yeah.
I think that's the issue, is that how far can you shoot, and, you know, what is your ability?
Yeah.
And I'm all for marksmanship, but I'm not for making it a requirement. Those is, myself included, you know, raised hunting since I was 6 years old, proper shot placement was key. Even right down to 222, 226, and 223. I've read numerous articles, small caliber, high proficiency, even on polar bears.
Mm-hmm.
22 making. Now, yes, you gotta be close, and it is far northeast Canada.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta be close, but, and they wait for a specific shot, you know, that the polar bear presents itself in such a way where it's opening up its chest cavity,
yeah,
and they're told exactly where to aim, they drop it one shot. Anyway, not going to be equal to it, but just keep your thoughts.
Okay. I didn't think so.
Okay.
I've been ranting and talking to Fish and Game for years about something in the school. We need something in the school. And it's not so much a requirement as I went around the school events talking about blue whales, and it's so... I was shocked at how little people knew about blue whales. And, you know, if we're going to keep hunting up here, we need people to take a little ownership in it. And it's such a fast and furious thing that, it, you know, when I was a kid, I would go hunting all fall. Today, there's 5 days we're going to do something, and boom, it's over with. Or, you know, weekend duck hunting, and it's over with. The emphasis of hunting and training kids and on, that it isn't, there's not a real big drive except for certain families. And I've said time and time again, get this class rolled into the schools, hunter safety card, and not so much, again, not making a requirement out of it, but just opening the door to educate kids. I'd personally like to see a muskox hunt for kids, let a whole bunch of kids go take a hunter safety class, and they draw, and somebody gets to shoot it, they butcher it, they pass it out to elders. What a program. I mean, what an awesome thing. And you know, it's kind of teaching the native culture, so to speak. But I plead that, you know, people don't really care that it's not impacting me, so go fight the battle somewhere else.
You guys need more HIT program volunteers and then somebody to go to the school board?
We do.
I think that's, you know, you see youth hunts in lots of places, and usually it's a few days before the regular season opens.
Mm-hmm.
And you have youth hunts I haven't seen. I don't know, in Alaska, you know, are there youth hunts?
There are.
Yeah, okay. My Falcon the weapon restricted, it would suck to be out hunting caribou with a 6.5 Creedmoor and small bear come by and I can't shoot them. So I just think that that's, I would rather see the education than the restrictions from a size, a caliber standpoint.
And we need to be aware there's another guy up north that's also going to throw some proposals out. I guess he didn't sign up. But I don't know. Do you feel like you can comment any on that? Or?
I have his list. Is he not? Justin Horton no longer in the student meeting.
Oh, he was on there.
Yeah, I thought I saw him at one point.
He has left the meeting.
Oh. I can tell you the, like, you know, one sentence version of what he's got.
Can I ask just for clarification? This is a Justin Horton. This is not known yet.
Yeah, there's two. It's very confusing.
Okay. Just wanted to get some clarification.
Yeah.
I was a little surprised to hear that, you know, we had a new local kid guy.
Yeah. All
right. Thank you.
That
makes a lot more sense now that, yeah, with some other conversations. But yeah,
I
have a couple coming in. Mm-hmm. That's what I thought.
So Justin Horton, he guides Moose for that DM 855 hunt 22E for non-residents. And he's got a couple of proposals that he's still drafting, I think, so I don't know how much they want to, like, take this maybe with a grain of salt, but the things he's got, so he first wants to shorten the resident season for Moose in 22E. So right now the season runs from August 1st through March 15th. And from the results of the composition survey that we just completed last fall, it seems like there's been a consistent decline in, like, bull power ratios. So we decided to decrease the number of drawing permits that we allocate to that area. So as a result, he believes that, I don't know, he just wants to reduce the residency, but I don't want to speak for him.
Excuse me, Sarah.
Yes. Oh, there he is. Perfect. Great. Yes.
Sorry, everyone. I was listening by phone. I was trying to be by Zoom on the internet, but anyway, I got low bandwidth or something. I keep getting dropped, so I was just listening by phone. So if I lose you, I apologize. But through the chair and all the board members and everyone there, thanks for listening to me. And Sarah, thanks for stepping in. My name is Justin Horton. I'm a registered guide in 22D&E. Been in there since 2009. Kind of worked under someone else and slowly but surely doing my own thing in there. Been an Alaska resident for 29 years. Been guiding for 15 now in that area. Also worked full-time as a firefighter paramedic. Volunteered 7 years in Chugiak. And, geez, I think I'm on 16 years here in Kenai, Alaska. I currently reside in Soldotna, Alaska. And anyway, I have one daughter and a wife, and just getting more invested in that area and starting to learn a lot of things, and taking part in some of these meetings is pretty huge. So I appreciate you being able to listen and even being able to speak. But just to go down the record, I've been working with Sarah, and yeah, I've been over that 15 years in that area. I've watched the moose non-resident quota just constantly get bushwhacked in that area. And one of the proposals that I'm considering to write up, these are all considerations, nothing is in ink or done, but is to reduce the length of the season for residents in that 22E. Currently, I believe it's open the first part of August till mid-March for any bull. And it just seems preposterous to me that people are out there chasing moose in the middle of winter, especially when a lot of those moose have lost their antlers, probably early January, if not mid-January. So I'm just kind of bounced with Sarah on some ideas when to close that up. So don't think we should be hunting them in the rut. But anyway, so that was one of the things that I was going to bring up. The other thing is I'm kind of listening in on your guys' talk of bears, and I'd like to be a bigger proponent of knocking down that bear population. I was talking with Sarah this spring, as I was up in Nome area, kind of checking on my camp, and I was surprised at how many moose calves were killed from bear predation that she had tagged. But can you guys all still hear me, or am I still there?
Still here.
Okay, all right, good. And so, anyway, currently it's a drawing permit system for 21 tags, and there's the same thing as James has mentioned. There's guide competition in the area, which is really messing stuff up, and hopefully down the road, the Big Game Commercial Services Board will, I don't know, have a remedy for that problem, or somebody will. But in the meantime, it's, I don't know, I was kind of talking to Sarah about turning it into a registration, but I watched what happened with the moose registration and the increase in guides in the area and how it became a disaster. And then then turned it into a drawing hunt, so it'd be better for my clients and just everyone in general. And then, yeah, anyway. So I don't know if I'm. Go ahead. Oh, I just hear some noise in the background. So anyway, I don't know. I'm looking for an increase in those tags. I don't know if just in the drawing system itself or the registration system. Sarah was kind of, and I am also worried about an over-harvest, and so leaving it that way as a drawing tag, if the harvest increase, you know, could have detrimental impacts on, you know, the bear population, but it seems to be, from what I'm hearing, steadily increasing. So I think even if it was hammered in 3 years and reevaluated at that time, that it couldn't be cut back. And, you know, it could just be up to that many permits. So it, throughout the drawing years, as Sarah did, this past year or whatever, reduced the 10 non-resident moose tags to 5 moose tags. That could be a possibility. And then the last thing that I wanted to mention to you guys is I kind of, again, my internet dropped out, and I think I came in on the tail end of a caribou discussion in the population up in that country. I haven't, I see caribou up in that neck of the woods where I'm guiding the month of August, and then they pretty much migrate out of there. I haven't really seen so far a major decrease, I guess, in the number of caribou we see. We don't see a lot, but I still see caribou in the, on the north side in 22E, like in the Arctic River drainage and whatnot. I put a proposal in 4 or 5 years ago before COVID to kind of open that area back up. And there was I wasn't really familiar with the process or the way to approach things, but, I think it's pretty obvious to me anyway, what's a reindeer and what's a caribou. And in the 15 years up there, I've had no part of killing any reindeer in the area. I've hunted as far as New Look, and I have seen a group of reindeer over there, but again, to me, it's pretty obvious what I'm looking at. And so that would be I'm looking for some help, I guess, in opening some portion more of that from the Sandwich River over westerly more. I know the Park Service, they're here today. They weren't for it either 5 years ago or whatsoever. But anyway, I know people in Shishmaref would probably like to see a little more open up there. And then, I failed to mention, I do hire guides out of Brevik and Shishmaref and Packers. I got 2 guys that steadily work for me, and I even fly them here and down to the Kenai area and take them over on the peninsula for bear hunts, and then also on Kodiak for some bear and goat hunts. But anyway, I appreciate your time. I've kind of gone on there for quite a bit, and just kind of looking for your ideas on some of those things. And anyway, that's it.
Brandon, thank you, Charlie. Justin, this is Brandon Romantic. I heard some things that were very concerning to me. And maybe I misunderstood what was being said. But I thought I heard you state that you've been guiding moose in 22D and E since 09.
Yes, I've helped as an assistant guide until 2013, and then as a registered guide, and then as a contracting guide in 2020, I believe, doing my own operation in there.
Okay, but the concerning part to me is, in particular, 22B, my understanding, there's no more non-resident hunt in there.
No, you're correct. There used to be about 5, I don't know the exact date, but the last time it was open in that area was about 5 years ago, but bear hunting is open in that area and caribou hunting. Sorry.
Making a clarification, making sure I didn't miss something, that all of a sudden the novice hunt opened back up again.
No, no, sir, no.
The other, I guess another concerning comment to me, and not word for word, but you couldn't understand why locals from the area were hunting moose later, you know, no close season. Maybe just some history for your information. You know, a lot of our outlying communities, you know, are heavily reliant upon subsistence cut resources throughout the year. And it's for that very reason, you know, that they're hunting moose,
you know, as soon as open until March, whatever it is up there. They're once heavily reliant upon caribou that, you know, came through their backyard more or less, but the caribou population has declined, almost to the point where they're not seeing caribou, at least in their backyard. They're having to travel farther. Right in the village, money's hard to come by. And that's the reasoning why they're allowed to hunt. You know, the population is still doing fairly good up there. Just for your information, you know, why they're doing that.
I appreciate those comments. Thanks for the clarification. For me, I understand that totally, and I donate a lot of the meat. I'll be honest, a lot of the hunters, they don't take a lot of the moose meat, so a lot of it does go to Brevik and Shishmaref. But again, my point is like, and Sarah can probably help me with this, is just from my experience in the wild, that most of those moose, it's an antlered bull hunt, and sometime in January, sometimes even December, those moose will drop those antlers. So I don't foresee a reason for that moose season. It's the longest one in the state. It's almost 6 months long for residents. And I appreciate communication back and forth, and I just personally don't see, you know, if there's no antlered bulls in the area in February and March, why they should be allowed to be even, you know, harassed or messed with at that time.
They're there in February.
Yeah.
This is Jacob Mannix. You will see, I mean, yeah, few and far between, I think I agree with you as a general rule, but yeah, they are there in February, and another AQ member here, Drew McCann, would also testify to that as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is Drew. Thanks for your service as a firefighter. I know the state greatly benefits from it. I appreciate that. I think, you know, I was up there this year, and I think you're missing more residents in 22E, and that's because our equipment to be able to harvest in 22C and 22D, the 22D remainder is so much better. More people were able to harvest. The season is short. So for me, when I wasn't successful in C or D, I went to E, and then in February, early February, while up at Serpentine, caribou hunting, ran into a 45-inch antlered bull about two drainages before the 22E boundary. So, of course, I was excited. I had my green tag, my harvest registration tag, and he was chasing a cow up the hill, and I went on, got my caribou. Never saw him again, but it was a close to 50-inch antlered bull right on the border between D and E. I agree, you know, March, you're probably not going to see much at all, but February, there's still a chance, and it's a fairly easy harvest for us with a snow machine trailer. Or toboggan. So as far as from a resource standpoint, you know, reducing the resident harvest in those areas, I don't see that benefiting anyone.
Justin, this is Tom Gray. You and I have talked a little bit. I'm not going to be sympathetic about trying to cut the moose hunt down. I lived in the village for a long time, and as far as I'm concerned, the village has priority over that resource, and, you know, us as guides, we come in after the fact, and if there's enough available, super. If there's not, it's a village hunt. But the reason I want to speak up is I heard, is there 21 non-resident pigs in E?
Yes, Tom, that's correct. Yep.
For bears.
For bears, yes.
Are they running out every year?
So what's happening is because of, I appreciate your comments, Tom. What's happening is there's so much competition in the area, and so they're gobbled.
There's competition, they're what?
And then they're primarily just allocated for fall for guys that are coming up caribou hunting these days and in the past four moose. So a lot of those guys wanted that grizzly bear tag in their pocket. So there definitely are no, in the last 2 years anyway, any leftover tags per se in that area.
Well, and I hope Jim is on board listening, Jim Smith, because we're in 22D, we're dealing with the same players basically as 22E in the guiding industry. And you know, I'm licensed to guide in 22E. I just haven't pulled a gun and went up there and done it. And it's probably pretty doubtful I'll go up with this last move of going to 5 moose hunters. But coming back to the bear issue, you know, there's you and me and another group of guides, and that other group of guides is the same as Jim Smith and me and that group of guides. So I hope he's listening to understand a little bit about what's going on the Sioux Peninsula.
Yeah, it's not a good thing, and I don't know the remedy for that, like I said, but I do know I'd like the ability to, I don't know, go after the bears like James does too, but I just, yeah, I'm racking my head around that, trying to figure out what to write up between now and the end of next month as far as a proposal.
Brandon? Not a comment, just an observation that I want to report. Antler bulls, wintertime, the latest I've seen an antler bull up Cripple River was April 15th.
Oh,
yeah, just little paddles, but April 15th.
I appreciate the entire board correcting me on all that. I can't speak because I honestly don't, my time's mostly spent up there August and September, and I haven't, so my history as far as antler dropping is for down here on the Kenai Peninsula mostly. So I apologize for that, and I appreciate you guys for clearing that up for me, that there actually are some antlered moose in there, and I appreciate that.
Yeah,
this is Charlie. In years gone by, we had if we had unrealized harvest, particularly in the Kuzatrine drainage, they'd open up antlered only short season in January, and some of us would run up there and try to shoot the little low-winkle bull that still had his antlers. The big guys tend to lose them first, but, you know, that was a subsistence hunt where we were interested in getting some meat, and then there was a harvestable surplus of those very young animals that are the most expendable part of the population. So that's been an issue in the past. I had a comment about your caribou versus reindeer and things. There's a fair amount of controversy here on the Sioux Peninsula about, is there resident caribou year-round, or is it some variation of reindeer and caribou? And so there's a couple places that have caribou, even when the Western Arctic herd supposedly doesn't migrate here. And it's Mendelevin and up your way. And, you know, historically there was a Sioux Peninsula caribou herd, but there's also been a lot of reindeer that escaped and could have crossbred and created some kind of a hybrid, so a lot of us would like to know more about that. And, you know, if you see calves, reindeer fawns, calves, in the summer, that's a good indicator that they're year-round animals. So that was just maybe something to consider
in making your case about caribou and reindeer? Is there a resident group, you know, should it be managed differently? Those are questions I ask myself and others all the time. Thanks.
Yeah, appreciate the comments, Charlie. I just know from what I've seen in the, you know, over the last 15, well, this will coming up to the 15th fall, but I just see them hanging around there in August, and then as soon as they start shedding that velvet, at least up in that border area, in the Kelly Creek area, they're pretty much start feathering out, and like, you're hard pressed to find, a caribou anywhere in sight. And I've seen, like you said, I think they have crossbred, and I've seen variations of different colorings and whatnot in the face on some of them that I'm skeptical, you know, kind of very suspicious that are a Mongol of the two. But other than, you know, seeing ear tag reindeer or a big pod together, I can't say that the only place that I have witnessed that is on the New Look River and on the far west side. I haven't seen anything on the east or in the Arctic River area heading back that way. So I was just looking for some input, you know, on possibly, potentially, maybe just going as far as the Arctic, you know, river drainage or something. But I don't know. It'd just be nice to have some more opportunity. And I think the residents of Shishmaref would probably like, you know, a little more opportunity. I know that Fish and Game, when it was knocked down 5 years ago, they said that they do have the ability, if there was abundance or something, that they could open that area up. But, you know, I don't think that's ever going to happen in the foreseeable future anyway. But there's definitely caribou roaming around, you know, on that, in that country that's, you know, no one has access to. And again, talking about subsistence and people wanting to be able to hunt them, I think, especially the people of Shishmaref, rather than push it east, you know, that way it gives them another opportunity to maybe head, you know, south or west as well to, you know, I'm just looking for a line in the sand, I guess, some input, if you will, on if you're even up to, you know, potentially supporting a more open area.
It's come before this group before, and Leona heard, and Wales heard, I can't remember. I heard it there, but they wanted the existing line, and but we gave it serious consideration sometimes. I don't know. It'd be interesting to hear from those guys again.
So we're talking reindeer, and I can't help but throw my two cents here, Charlie.
Sure.
I'm the president of the Reindeer Herd Association, and we had a big powwow over where is the line for caribou, and you know, Earmark Mountain was. You go right or left, depending which way you went, it was open. Now, the reindeer industry, had issues with a guide shooting, quote, caribou over near the Nuluk River. And the Nuluk River is close to caribou. And yet, he got away with it. Up to this point, anyway. So buyer beware, if it's ever going to be, broached to be open again, I hope folks will have the courtesy to involve the reindeer industry to, talk about how it's going to impact them when this process starts. And that's what happened last time, but, anyway, I'm, you know, our industry, the reindeer industry, is in pretty dire straits. It's pretty bad shape, and I'm not too excited about anybody shooting animals, whether it's not out of ignorance or whatever. And some of the struggles that we've had is the industry maintains, there's caribou up around Serpentine, and there's also reindeer. And you know, we've had reports of are these animals by Serpentine cabin. And the reports that I heard through this grapevine is no, they're not calving. If they're calving in June, that'd be a sign that they're caribou. But they weren't. So, and we went so far as to ask for DNA studies and blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, this is a issue that I would like to see the state and the fish and game and the reindeer industry and the park and some players sit down and kind of weed it out, get it figured out, so we can put it to rest. You know, the public is always going to say, oh, those are caribou. You know, the guiding industry is going to say they're caribou and prove me wrong. But, and I'm a guide, so I kind of understand. But I've also been involved in the reindeer industry, and I have a different picture of what's right and wrong.
Tom, thanks for those comments. Yeah, I just had one more. I haven't asked this question yet, but maybe you can answer it, because I, like I said, I'm trying to get my head in the game more on everything and what's happening around me, but I don't know the history of when it was all closed and shut down, but I don't know if there was a number of reindeer that were killed, or there's just it's just unknown if there was or was not, and so that's why that area on that west side from the Sandwich over was shut down, is because no one really truly knows if there was reindeer versus caribou getting shot. Is that the reason why?
I think part of the big reason it was shut down was to protect the reindeer industry. The reindeer down towards other side of Nuluk and Wales and down in that country, you know, the idea was to keep guides and people from shooting animals down that way. And there's a tunnel that goes in front of your mountain, if I remember right. You know, we had a big powwow on this issue at one time, but if I remember right, it was the impacts to the reindeer industry. They were trying to separate those two issues.
So this is Charlie. My memory of that was in the 2000s, the Western Arctic caribou herd, early 2000s, started to migrate more and more onto the Seward Peninsula and further until that point. The Seward Peninsula had been reindeer country, and there were all these polygons that were the herders' territories, just like you have guide territories or reindeer herders' kind of territories awarded them. And so, as some of the herds ran away with the caribou, there was a lot of concern and consternation about which areas were still active as reindeer sites and which were now caribou wintering country, and so the history is that area has always been closed because it was reindeer country. Yeah. And the line has actually relaxed slowly that way because of the caribou, but now the caribou are in fewer numbers. Reindeer herders are jealously hanging on to what they have. And without documented caribou migration, that's going to be a really hard case to make. So that's what you're up against.
And all right. That truly. Mm-hmm. The whole Seward Peninsula right now is all divided up into state and federal reindeer permits. The Weewanas have an active permit. Good Hope should have a permit. Entourage, you know, those are the players that you guys deal with on your side. From Wales to
Good Hope River is all permitted. From Good Hope River to Campbell, it's all permitted. Now, Campbell may not be permitted, but the point I'm trying to make is 90% of the Seward Peninsula is permitted. If somebody came to my range and started shooting animals on my range, I would pay close attention and probably be calling troopers. So.
Gotcha. I appreciate it, Chair and Tom, for the input. Anyway, I've taken up a lot of your guys' time, and I appreciate it. Appreciate your service on this advisory committee and, yeah, the chance to talk. And sounds like about the only proposal I have to probably work on is the bear one. But one final question, I guess, maybe this is directed towards Tom, is if I had the support of Wiawana or Good Hope on expanding that borderline to the west, would that be a direction to take, or just should go through the Reindeers or Herders Association?
For caribou hunting?
Yes.
You're going to have to get a lot. You're going to have to get this EAC involved. You have to get the federal RAC involved. You know, the REHA is there's going to be a lot. It's not going to change overnight. Board game controls it, I think.
Reindeer Herders Association.
Yeah, Hunter Isaac and Wiawana are the guys that have those units. But it's not just their decision.
Yeah, it's a board game decision to move that line. And the park has, I mean, you're kind of bucked up against the park to get on the other side of the park and be able to hunt unless you're permitted through the park. You'll have to walk in there or something, I guess. So. But to move that line is a major process.
So I'd like to just chime in real quick on this caribou hunt. As far as any increased opportunity for non-resident hunting of those caribou, this is Jacob Mannix, by the way. You may be jumping the gun a little bit right now just because they're going to be managed as the Western Arctic herd. And that is going, there's going to be some significant changes to hunting the Western Arctic herd coming up in the very near future that will affect that area. And so those are, you know, that's where, you know, don't waste your breath on, I'm worrying about this stuff right now because the Western Arctic herd is in decline. And that's ultimately what's going to be the limiting factor for you. If that herd bounces back in 10 years, then you might be able to start looking at, you know, having this discussion seriously. But until then, that herd is in poor shape.
He's ready.
Gotcha. Yeah. Thanks. Good point.
Thank you, Dustin. We appreciate you coming in and participating.
Yeah, thanks for the time and everybody on the board and chair for, the time to talk and, kind of converse with you on those ideas and, your input on them. Saved me some time and wasting my breath on some of them, so I appreciate that.
Thanks. We're running out of topics. The next Board of Game, session will be in January in Coxsview, and we'll have plenty of time to choose who goes there then, and we have to elect new officers and all that stuff. I've been going to the fish meetings a lot. It's an honor, but it's a job. I wouldn't mind saying that. Anyway, so just think about that. And I don't know. We need to find a way to get other people to participate. It would be good to have a real in-person meeting with outlying communities here too. I think that would go a long way to making participation much better.
Yeah, agreed. And for those folks with the state that are still on the phone, I know you guys are, this is Jacob Mannix, but you're all very well aware that there can be issues getting a quorum and there are challenges with these kind of rural Alaska AC meetings, but whatever support we can get from the state side, is from board support in particular, it's hugely appreciated. And thank you, Georgie, for doing what you can. I have one very quick thing to talk about. This is kind of an aside as a wrap up, but ladies in the area, two foxes within 5 days in my neighborhood were killed and both tested positive for rabies. I just got the second test results back today. And the state vet has requested, at least from some of us anyway, that like it'd be good to just have general observations about the fox population and other critter populations around the area, hare, lemming, et cetera. And if you shoot, a symptomatic fox, bring it to double bag it, bring it to fishing game, wherever it goes.
Yeah.
On that, I'm wondering if there's if in the city limits, could we get, just like the muskox hunt in town, could we get a specific fox hunt here in town? To me, it's just pretty simple. It's just a permit that somebody applies for, they got their hunting license, truck, whatever. But even if they used one of the newer high-power pellet rifles, 17 caliber, 1,600 feet per second, you're talking shotgun speed, 12-gauge shotgun speed, close distance, not obviously not 500 yards away, but in the essence of safety, not just for me, for the kids. Maybe I'm going way too far from the weeds, but my understanding a long time ago, some lady's pride wiener simple that caught somebody's trap and she raised hell at the city and home. And, by God, you gotta shut down this trapping in around town. And then what happened shortly after they passed an ordinance, no more trapping, but then the fox population rose. Just within the last several years, I heard of fox bedding under the school. Multiple fox, not just one, but our kids are right there. That, or giving the animal control, give them a pellet gun. Have them roam the streets at night, and get rid of the fox problem. It's a problem. I'm just going to say it. My youngest, he's never not far from the school, but he walks to the school every morning. But that's a concern I have, is that he's going to get in the bony, but that he's going to get bit by a fox. Maybe some other kids could get bit by a fox. So, maybe we need to put open up fox hunting here in town, but with, and hunting license, permit, special permit, but to really go out and get a fox, help control the problem.
I don't think there's anything stopping people from shooting them in town right now. But you can't use a pellet gun or a slingshot.
Personally, okay, that's
a city ordinance.
If you limit it down to a high-powered pellet gun.
Yep. And I think something from us to the city council to support that would be all good. Because I was red in the face 2 years ago with them about it, and then they brought the feds in and cleaned up rabies, and then we thought it was a one-time occurrence, and again.
Well, even on that, yes, there's city ordinance that you can't shoot pellet guns here in town. Yet, there's no ordinance that I can't use a 375,
right.
Out by Tom's to drop a bear. Or even ice of you. Just as long as I'm not shooting at toward the house across the road toward people, I can do it.
And I can tell you from first-hand experience, last year I had a lot better time with 5 traps, and they weren't educated on them. this year they're educated on them. Like, I can't get hardly any in the live case this year. Last year they were stupid enough to get them time after time after time. But this year they're like, nope, not touching it. I think the other thing that's important to note is that we didn't see a lot of this that we did last year early in the year because there wasn't as much food source for them readily available. This year you take one step and you see five mouse go running early in the season. Now the mouse are either, I don't know if they hibernate or what they do, but you don't know there's many mouse.
There are multiple layers of ice.
And so then you see the fox come out. Yeah, I agree with you. I think the city needs to look at this as their problem in the city limits and address it.
Another thing I want to mention is that they use private meters consideration. But unless it's changed, my understanding, when you take your pet outside, it's supposed to be on a leash or chained up. There's a city ordinance. They overlook that. But, you know, in close, there's an ordinance that you can't do without an engineering home. Or, I mean, I'm sorry, there's no more traffic. They didn't put a band-aid on it, they just ignored the, in my opinion, they just ignored the problem.
You know, well, rabies isn't just a fox thing. Certainly it's a big problem, but stray dogs and cats and all kinds of things get rabies. And some of these alley cats we have around here are versus predators in their own right. So.
I didn't say that. That's my policy.
But anyway, yeah. Well, anyway. Okay, well, thank you. I don't anticipate any more meetings before next fall. So I guess if we have something come up, let me know and I'll do my best.
Were we going to discuss that caliber release?
I don't believe anyone in this room wants to write that proposal. So I think it's coming up. I just wanted to put it out there because it is going to come up. So
the deadline for submitting proposals is what, like May 1st or something like that?
I know the two guys that are writing the proposal. It's going to come up. So.
And then I will probably submit some of the proposals that I talked about as well. I'm not going to be submitting them from the AC because we didn't have a quorum to be able to do anything like that. But, you know, I'll throw them out there. Vote on them how you will.
the small caliber thing, I'm just going to say I'm opposed to it. You're merely asking a question to the guy. If you can miss it for 223, you can miss it for 375 acres. Proper shot placement. Real question is, 223, 222, equipped with the proper bullet, is it capable of dropping even the biggest North American big game animal? Yes, it is. If you put it in the bunkhouse, they're going to.
I shot moose with a 22 long rifle.
Wow. Statute of limitations is probably passed on that.
Yeah, they have to, but then we'll do this with a policy.
We're done.
Diverse session.
Well, thank you, guys. Thank you, Dorothy.
You're welcome. Ace, just for information for those that want to submit the proposals, there are avenues you could do it online under the Fish and Game website. It's pretty simple. It's the same format that we use when you type it up. But just to put that out there, and if you need any assistance filing anything, let me know. I can help out.
Thank you, Georgie.
You're welcome.
We'll be submitting.
Till the next time. Thank you, Sarah.
Oh, thank you.
What are you saying? December. I told them that the court will probably be submitted.
Yeah, well, I think
get a fish out of here and forget it. So, pretty sure everybody just do this.
What?